All right, North-South Connection listeners, this is Chad Campbell back again with another edition of the Fighting Spirit of 06. This week, we are going to only be chronicling WWE Raw from January 9th, 2006, and then the SmackDown from that following week, which would have been January 13th. This was a busy week. We have a very eventful Raw and SmackDown. And then our next show, we will look at the first Ring of Honor show of 2006, Hell Freezes Over, which kicks off the CCW versus Ring of Honor feud. And also look at a very kind of pivotal TNA show where they had the Go Home Impact to Final Resolution and then also the Final Resolution pay-per-view, which features the return of Sting, a Christopher Daniels versus Samoa Joe match. And I've watched that show today, actually, and a lot of scratch your head finishes. So that'll be our next episode. But let's dig into what was going on in the WWE this week. And we're coming off the heels of the New Year's Revolution pay-per-view. We get a recap to start off Raw with the Elimination Chamber match and then the shocking finale of that match with Edge cashing in the Money in the Bank briefcase, winning the world title. John Cena starts us off with a promo. I thought he actually got a good reaction tonight. We'll digest it a little bit and dissect it and see kind of what we thought about how he was able to garner a good reaction throughout the night. But even with this promo, I thought he did very well in speaking to his audience and kind of understanding the dynamic that was going on with the crowd. So John says that Edge made an opportunistic choice last night. He acknowledges there's some boos against him, and that does get some Cena sucks chants from the people that are detractors of Cena in the crowd. But then he says, you know, he rides with his crew. That actually gets louder chance than the Cena sucks. So like I said, it was a pro Cena crowd on the whole. And then Cena quotes Allen Iverson saying there's a million people who love him but 10 million people who hate him, and the people that hate him can kiss his ass. And he's cashing in on his rematch clause tonight. He throws his hat, takes off his shirt, he's ready to go. Edge music fires up, but out comes Lita. Lita says that Cena will get his rematch, but not tonight. Lita's talked to Mr. McMahon, and after some oral persuasion, he agreed that they would face off at the Rumble. Huge slut chants are directed towards Lita. Lita says Edge isn't fighting, but he's going to be doing something that starts with the letter F tonight, and that her and Edge are going to wrestle. And Lita says, unlike Cena last night, Edge will last longer than 2 minutes. As you get with Lita, like, she's a pretty hateable character at this point, with how she's acting and her kind of image, but her promo skills, like usual, are pretty wooden. So all in all, this wasn't awful by any means, but she also didn't deliver the promo, I thought, with the best conviction that we probably really needed. And then Cena gives a short rebuttal to her, saying at the Rumble he's going to beat Edge's ass. So that was that. Not a bad opening segment. The show then kind of goes downhill from there, though, as we get our first match of the night, which is Trish Stratus versus Ashley Massaro. Mickey's our guest ring announcer. She scolds the crowd for not giving Trish a proper response. So her and Trish are kind of bickering back and forth. I guess Ashley became the number one contenders for winning a bra and panty match the night before. Joey admits that that match wasn't a Mac classic at New Year's Revolution, but they all loan the videotape for it. And this match goes about 2 minutes here on Raw, and it's awful. Like, Ashley is really, really bad. Trish tries to save it, but for a 2-minute match, this is pretty poor here. Ashley, the finish comes when Ashley has a pinfall attempt, but Mickey gets in and causes the DQ automatically. Trish pulls her off. They have a discussion, and then we get this another botch where Lillian Garcia actually announces Trish as the winner. All the announcers, Joey, Coach, and King, correct and scream and say, "No, Trish is not the winner," in a funny ball. But, and then Trish actually corrects Lillian Garcia. Then she announces that Ashley won by DQ, but Trish is still the champion. So just poor stuff all around. In the back, Vince and John Cena talk. Vince says it's too bad about the Money in the Bank cash-in, but he loves first times, and he says tonight it'll be the first live sex celebration. It'll also be the first time him and Edge are one-on-one at the Rumble. I guess he's not counting the short match last night. And he wants the live sex celebration to go on without a hitch, so he asks for no interference and for everything to go nice and smooth. Cena assures him he's not going to interfere, but Vince says just in case, if he does interfere, the rematch at the Rumble won't happen, to kind of persuade him a little bit more to leave the live sex celebration alone. Also in the back, Carlito's taping up, and oh, this was bad. I'm a big first couple of shows I've talked about how much I like Chris Masters, but he looks really bad here, where he grabs Carlito by the shirt and tries to look real mad, but it looks cartoony. Doesn't look genuine at all. Look like kind of first day in acting class. It was just bad. I was laughing hilariously at how serious that Chris Masters was trying to look. So this was just very unnatural. Carlito's shocked face didn't really help matters either. So again, all in all, bad segment. Then we get a Chavo Guerrero versus Rob Conway in a Royal Rumble qualifier. Very basic match here. I did forget for a second, not thinking about the date of this show, that this was pretty close to post Eddie death, about 2 months removed. So Chavo does get a nice reaction coming out. The announcers announce that Rob Van Dam's returning at the Rumble. Conway gets an early advantage, knees Chavo to the floor as he tries to skin the cat back in. A pretty boring chin lock. Chavo comes out, takes over with Pescado. Chavo hits a clothesline inside and a head scissor. And then Conway kept mimicking Eddie's mannerisms and all that, and some of his signature moves. It was kind of in poor taste. Chavo returns with the Three Amigos and hits the Frog Splash for a win. Basic match, star and a half. Angle and Shawn Michaels have a face-to-face. They hash out last night, and then Shawn asks if he can trust Angle because they're in a tag match later tonight. Angle shows him his medal and then brings up that Shawn can trust him because he's an Olympic champion. And, you know, Shawn is HBK and has some past history. So that makes sense to me, which I'm not sure it should be or not. But, I mean, the heel was making sense here. Angle also brings up McMahon's zero tolerance policy. Finally, Shelton and his mama are talking about how proud they were of his performance the night before, where he beat Viscera. They see Val Venus. Shelton's mom says, "Hey, I think I've seen you in some movies." And Val runs through a list of some of his most well-known titles, including Harry Twatter. That gets Shelton's mom mad. She says she's a good Christian woman and that Val's going to hell, tonight, because he's facing off with Shelton Benjamin. Then we get kind of our marquee tag match and our marquee match really on this edition of Raw, which is Shawn Michaels and Kurt Angle versus Carlito and Chris Masters. And I did not like this match very much at all. I'm really struggling with Shawn Michaels in 2006 so far. He's had two long Raw matches that have been given a chance to, you know, be solid or what you'd expect, be good, and neither one of them have been very good at all. Big brawl to start. Angle and Sean take over with two headlocks. Carlito back suplexes Angle, but is refusing to tag in the Masterpiece. Sean gains control for a bit, and now Masters gets tagged in. Sean right away takes over on him, and then he tags an Angle. Finally, Masters is able to get a little bit of offense with a good power slam against Angle, but that lasts for literally 2 seconds as Kurt hits a German suplex right away. I just thought this match overall was very absurd, making Carlito and Chris Masters look weak. We just saw the night before, when they worked cohesively for most of the Elimination Chamber, that they could be successful and they could knock out some big names with how they eliminated Kane specifically, but also Angle. I'm sorry, not Angle, but Sean throughout the match. So it just was disappointing to see them devolved into basically being Sean and Angle's whipping boy. And even beyond that, Sean and Angle then start not getting along. So there's a problem there. We miss any heat that they get because as soon as they go on offense, we go to break. When we come back from break, Angle hits a belly to belly. Sean gets the hot tag, quote-unquote, and rolls through most of his offense. He's about to give Chris Masters a sweet chin music when Carlito trips him, posts his nuts. Carlito, I thought, it looked pretty poor throughout this match and slow, kind of a step behind, but he does hit a nice drop kick. Sean gives an awful sell job of that, fish out of water. He does have a little bit of trace of blood on his forehead. Carlito decides to lock in a chin lock, which is, again, not the most exciting move. Sean fights out of that but gets hit with the backstabber. And then they fight again. Michaels hits a backdrop. He goes to tag Angle, but Angle's consulting, quote-unquote, with Daivari. Masters pounds more on the forehead and hits a good-looking power slam, and Sean is able to get the DDT and goes for the tag again, but Angle this time's admiring his metal. Sean gets mad at Angle doing that, hip tosses him in, sweet chin music for Angle. They're calling that a tag. The referee calls that a tag, and immediately Masters locks in the master lock, which is good. I mean, so the match gets called, but they basically attribute it to the sweet chin music. Angle's in this master lock forever. He doesn't really tap. He's knocked out. And this overall is just very weird. I mean, I do understand we get Sean versus Angle next week on Raw, but I felt like they'd done such a good job of building up the new blood in Masters and Carlito so far early on in 2006. This felt like a pretty significant step back and was disappointing to see. Backstage, Sean and Vince meet quickly. Vince is giddy, saying that's the Shawn Michaels he loves, backstabbing people left and right. So that was fine. Triple H promo, he doesn't really have nothing much going on either right now. He kind of finished the Big Show feud the night before, so he's kind of in limbo. Has a few parting words for Edge, but basically says he wants to be the champion, but not a lot. Kind of spokes in the fire right now for Triple H. Edge and Lita are at New Year's Revolution, right? They show a clip of them leaving the arena the night before. They proclaim to Ty Grisham that they're having live sex on Raw, so gear up. Another qualifying, Shelton Benjamin versus Val Venus. Another quick match, back and forth, full match. Val's interesting. He's one of those guys where he'd been in the company now for about 8 years, and he might could have had something, might could have had a second life, but they're just not really pushing him in that level. He's kind of basic gatekeeper for mid-card, where, you know, if you're getting any sort of sustained push, you should be beating Val with how they're treating him right now. The finish I thought was bad, as Mama takes a hairpin out, jams it in Val's ass, And then Shelton's able to get the win off of that. A star in three quarters for this one. We get the big Royal Rumble, Julius Caesar knockoff McMahon promo. It's pretty funny. It's definitely memorable. And then we have Kane versus Snitsky. This is our last match of the night. Literally less about 2 minutes tops. Snitsky attacks right away with the big boot. Kane sets up. He hits his big boot, running charge, sidewalk slam, and a choke slam for the pin. Again, a quarter star. This is your Aaron George, I guess. 2.5 star squash. But, I mean, it went 2 minutes. They did nothing. I'm confident in going with a quarter star here. And then Kane actually gets on the mic and says there'll be 29 other victims at the Rumble. And I just wrote, you know, I'm not falling for that shit this year, Kane. Heard that one too many times. It's kind of a Kane that cried wolf situation. Then it's time for our main event segment. It's the live sex celebration. Edge starts with a promo. I guess that's his foreplay. He says the champ is here. He talks about his dastardly plan. And I will say, so then I'll say this. Apparently, on the live version, I read a couple of live reports, and I did vaguely recall this from when I'd seen this segment before, but they showed clips of Edge winning various championships throughout the years. For some reason, that's scrubbed out of the network version. I don't have any idea why, but it's not on here. That was kind of weird, but overall, I mean, it was fine to hear Edge go through his plan, it did kind of draw out, because if you did order the pay-per-view, I mean, you'd seen all this, and hearing it rehashed again kind of verbatim with a blow-by-blow account of what happened at New Year's Revolution, it felt a little long-winded. I understand that, you know, there's obviously a lot more people watching Raw than ordered the pay-per-view, so you got to play for that audience too, and it was a decent promo to get people up to date, but for me personally, it just felt a little long in the tooth. Then we get to the sex part. Some jazz music starts away. Edge gets rid of his boots and socks. He takes off Lita's boots. Snitsky gets the name drop here. And they undress each other. Edge has some terrible looking boxer briefs, biker shorts, some weird combo on. Edge goes to unhook the bra, as now they get into the bed that's in the middle of the ring. I did notice, like, the commentators are talking throughout this, Coach and King. Joey Styles really says nothing throughout all this. I think you could sense the embarrassment. Joey Styles is probably someone as an announcer I'm maybe lower on than most historically, but you could definitely tell there was a little bit like, oh, I mean, this is not for me, which is kind of weird because he did come from ECW, but I did find that strange that he kind of laid back throughout this whole segment. Edge gets on top, throws the bra off. Coach has the audacity to say in the middle of this that this is the most incredible thing he's ever seen on Raw. And then, of course, this is pretty infamous that the live crowd, they did get a nip slip from Lita. Of course, that's edited out from the network version, but you can certainly hear a loud pop from the crowd when that moment happened. Edge then has Lita's panties in his mouth. Lita gives Edge what is presumed to be a blowjob. And finally, Ric Flair comes out to break this up. He calls Edge a disgrace, says it takes blood, sweat, and tears to prove your championship quality. I mean, and overall, I kept saying to myself, I was like, well, this is great. This is a fine promo, and Flair's certainly adamant and has the personality to convey it. But, I mean, wasn't the Nature Boy gimmick essentially this, too? So it does feel a little hollow coming from Flair, who spent the whole decade of the 80s talking about he's, you know, kiss stealing, willing, dealing, son of a gun. Spent most of that decade as the world champion, saying you got to be this dedicated blood, sweat, and tears type, grinded out professional to become the top dog in the business. And then even in real life, like Flair basically says that now he's going to show Lita how it's done. Flair beats up Edge. Edge has a chair outside the ring, and he absolutely decapitates Flair with it. Flair, of course, does a blade job because it's Ric Flair in 2006. It's busted wide open. Edge gives him the concerto on the announcer table. The crowd's chanting loudly for Cena. He comes out through the crowd. He beats up Edge on the bed, and Edge flees with his belt, and then he turns his attention to Lita and gives her an FU to Big Pop to end the show. So that is what I was talking about before, where I mean Edge flees, doesn't look very strong as a champion, kind of looks weaselly. The attack on Flair was good. I'm interested to see how their match is coming up, because I remember enjoying it, but overall I didn't think he looked too credible as champion. And Cena now has to give violence to Lita, a woman with this FU on the bed, to get a face pop to end the show. Oh, if you can't tell by the way I described it, I was not a fan of this Raw overall at all. I thought it sputtered. We didn't get even, I would say, a decent match. Just didn't click for me, and I think that really honestly lies at the shoulders of Edge and Shawn Michaels. Those are the two people that are being featured prominently. I'm trying to be fair, but I just didn't find either one of them very compelling here. And the whole live sex thing just really felt like Edge trying to play a wrestling character instead of believing that he is this rated R superstar and this is something he would naturally do within his character. It just didn't work for me. I think this is a pretty infamous Raw, just because, I mean, live sex, like even somebody like me that was completely checked out of the WWF product at this time, I was aware of this, and actually may have even tuned into this live just based off the intrigue of New Year's Revolution. So I don't think it was very successful overall. It was a chore for me to get to. And now let's transition into SmackDown. And this is a very eventful SmackDown. This happened January 13th, 2006. It was taped in Philadelphia. And Batista comes out in a swank cream suit with a brown shirt. He gives a very heartfelt speech, relinquishing the title to Teddy Long. He talks about his injury. He says he misses Eddie, and also talks about the lineage of champions he wanted to make proud. A girl in a yellow shirt with glitter eye makeup is just absolutely bawling throughout this promo. They keep cutting to her, and she's losing it. And then Batista surrenders the championship to Teddy Long, and Batista says to be the man, you got to beat the man. He vows to be champion again, and he high-fives the fans, hugs the announcers, kisses baby as he leaves. So what caused all this? Because last I left you, Batista was getting beat down by Mark Henry in the cage. So there was a house show on the same night as the New Year's Revolution pay-per-view, and Batista ends up tearing his bicep for the third time. The day after the show was taped, he was did surgery with Dr. James Andrews in Birmingham. And there was a lot of doubt around this time. As I mentioned before on this series, I've been listening to a lot of the Brian Alvarez Figure Four dailies. I've been reading the Observers from this time frame. And the serious concerns on whether Dave would ever return. This was a very serious injury. It's the third time he tore his bicep. Some haven't recovered from that. The third time, I think the Patriot, I believe, was cited as someone that on his third bicep tear was done for in the business. So, I mean, there's legitimate concern whether Dave would come back. And I think there's also a discussion that can be made that, as was chronicled mostly through the Place to Be podcast, 2005, when Batista and Cena both won the championships at WrestleMania 21, I think you can say that Batista in general certainly got the better face reactions throughout the rest of that year, and really had the great feud with Triple H, culminated in the Hell in the Cell, and had momentum and kind of felt like he might be that next guy after the lineage of, Hogan, Bruno, Backlund, Hogan, Savage, If you want to throw Bret Hart, Austin, Rock, like then Batista next. And it's interesting to think about that. I don't know if he ever reaches these heights again. He does come back, which is no spoilers there. And he does have a successful career where he is champion again. So more power to him that he did come back from this awful injury. But this is kind of a moment in time, really. I mean, this is a good what if and a moment in time all encapsulated in one. So as a promo, I thought it was fine. I mean, I thought more than fine. I thought it was very good. I thought Batista seemed genuine, which he probably was. And it was interesting to watch. So just very, very interesting segment to watch overall. Then we get a commercial for Raw Magazine. I could not believe that was still going on in 2006. And then as we come back from break, Batista is now backstage. He meets Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Bobby Lashley, Animal, referees, Arn Anderson, and finally Rey Mysterio. Him and Rey have some good interaction. Batista says the belt would look good around Rey's waist. That's some very cool foreshadowing. Overall, I enjoyed that. And Teddy then is in the ring. He makes his announcement as he holds up the belt that the Legacy will go on. And the main event match now for this SmackDown taping will be a top rope battle royal for the WWE Championship. That got a really good pop from the crowd, so I guess they were happy with Teddy's decision. Now we get a big match for SmackDown. Promo package showing the U.S. title best of seven clips. Orton catches up with Teddy backstage. Orton says all he needs is for him to postpone the match tonight with him and Benoit so he can win the world championship. Teddy refuses to do that. Teddy says he only has one match tonight, and it's versus Benoit. And I did say I thought that was kind of unfair, kind of sucked for Orton, you know. I mean, more power to the U.S. Championship, but obviously if given the choice, I'd want to be in the world title battle royal as well. So that leads us to our match number 7, Chris Benoit versus Randy Orton. And I'm just going to kind of bury the lead and go out and say it here. I don't think this match gets talked up nearly enough. I thought this was a great match. Really one of, I'll be shocked if this isn't one of the better TV matches we have throughout the year. And I keep thinking there's some big SmackDown matches that people think about between Steve Austin and Chris Benoit in Edmonton, and the you have the Iron Man match between Angle and Lesnar. You have the Ray versus Eddie 2005 SmackDown match, but I don't think this is that far behind those type of classic SmackDown matches that you must first think of when you think of what's the best matches in SmackDown history. I think this should be on any list. The first 3 minutes are very good, intense mat work. Benoit starts working a hammerlock until Randy's able to roll through. They get tangled up in the ropes and are still working holds with each other. Just great, gritty, tightly worked wrestling. And what I liked about this is you didn't even have to kind of stretch your credibility. I mean, I do like Angle and Benoit as a pairing, but I do, to a degree, understand the critique that, you know, Angle's a legitimate gold medal winner in wrestling. Benoit did some amateur in high school and was in the dungeon. So, I mean, Angle's a legit 10 out of 10 amateur wrestler, and Benoit's probably a 2-3 at best. And so for them to go toe-to-toe like they did in the opening stanza of WrestleMania 17, excuse me, it does seem a little hacky. So I thought this worked better with that, with both Benoit and Orton mainly being trained as pro wrestlers. So, you know, they can kind of mix it up with each other. Benoit drops his throat over the top rope. He threatens to hit him with the crutch. This was a great moment. So Booker T's outside with Charmel. So what happens is Booker threatens to hit Benoit with his crutch. Benoit pulls an Eddie Guerrero. He fakes that he got hit when the referee turns around. He points towards Booker, and the referee buys it and throws out Booker. I thought that was just a very fun, great spot. Benoit sold it well, and it really worked. That leads us into a commercial break. Back from the break, some more great mat work. Benoit's constantly going for different stuff, never staying in anything for more than a minute. Never has a chance to get born. It's just a go, go, go. Randy's working from the bottom a lot, but he's having to lock on these type of chokes and headlocks and basically just trying to be a glue for his opponent and not allow him to get any distance to really damage him. He's wanting to stay close, fight dirty, and fight hard. So some nice complementary styles clashing here together between Benoit's philosophies and Orton's philosophies. Randy's trying to control things more again, but Benoit's going after the armbar. Arm works really stiff, good looking. Orton's on the top rope, and then he gets sent to the guardrail on the outside. As we take another break, we're back from that. The match is evening up and starting to break down, you know. Orton, I thought, threw some good punches on top. And then he hits a beautiful dropkick to take over. Chops versus forearm exchange between him and Benoit. Benoit's able to gain the advantage, hooks on the sharpshooter. Thought they did a good job showing that he couldn't lock the sharpshooter on all the way and able to sit down, allowing Orton to escape. Germans from Benoit now. He looks for the diamond headbutt. Orton moves at the last possible second. The referee gets bumped. Orton hits a backbreaker. Orlando Jordan runs out. Orton elbows him off the apron. And then he goes for the RKO. That's turned into a crossface. And here comes Booker T. Booker T scurries down his crutches. He misses the crutch swing. And then Benoit hammers him. And another RKO attempt. And this time Benoit is able to lock on the crossface. Orton's tapping out, but the referee is out. And then Benoit goes to recover the ref. But as he rises to his feet, Booker T's back and slams the belt on Benoit's neck, and Orton's able to cover him and win the U.S. Championship. So, very long match, went about 20 minutes, and I thought it was a great match. I ended up going 4 stars, 8.1 on the 10-point scale. A great match, and one I'd recommend going back and check out, because, again, I just thought from the way it progressed and the opening mat work, it was just a gritty, great match that seems to be forgotten. JBL and Hot Rod have a promo backstage to set up a Piper's Pit, and then we show a clip where Vicky Guerrero is given the Star of El Paso award. A very cool video showing that and dealing with the death of Eddie Guerrero. Then we get the low point for SmackDown, which is a Piper's Pit segment. Piper is way past his expiration date here. Piper says the Pit started in Philly 20 years ago, and now it comes JBL. He calls himself the biggest icon of them all. He says he never had a note from Mommy when he was champion, and then he sets up his coronation as champion tonight in the Battle Royal. He praises New York City as the greatest city in the world. Piper's pretending to be sleeping through all this, and he ends the promo calling himself a wrestling god. Like, just a pretty empowering promo here by JBL, and again, Arn imitates life with the way he was thinking of himself around this time. Piper, to be funny, brings up Jillian's mole. Piper says that JBL's Gene Poole couldn't even put a vowel in there. And then he announces his true guest for this week's Piper Pit, and that was the Boogeyman. JBL freaks out, but he waits around for about 5 minutes for this whole long entrance, which is just stupid. And then JBL throws Jillian into the Boogeyman. Boogie stares at her, grabs the mole, starts licking it, starts eating it. And just overall, I mean, what a stupid fucking angle. Like, this is one I'm not looking forward to. The work rate's not going to be good when they face off. And just everything's just a non-starter right now. It's just gross and not working out. Melina hypes up Eminem and Mark Henry before the big Battle Royal. And Melina says the odds in their favor that one of them will leave as champion. We also learned that Finley's coming in next week, so thumbs up for that. Really looking forward to Finley entering the promotion. And now it's time for our big main event for the vacant championship, Battle Royal, 20-man Battle Royal. Not a lot of title changes on SmackDown up to this point. which is exciting. So, I mean, this was a big moment here, and you did see some of the competitors announced. Some got the jobber entrance, but I'm trying to quickly, let me think if there was who, what, let's see. Well, did we have, I know Vince McMahon won the title from Triple H on SmackDown, and then we had also the Iron Man match that happened on SmackDown. But besides that, I don't know if we'd had any more title changes on SmackDown. So that's pretty crazy, pretty amazing. Let me just double check. Let me double check the World Heavyweight Championship to make sure I'm not blanking on something. No, yeah, so Vince McMahon and the Iron Man title change are the only two we've had on SmackDown. And it's 5+ year run at this point, really 5.5 years almost run. So that's kind of crazy. And let me just give a quick look and see when the last time the title changed hands on Raw was, because he was awarded, you know, Triple H was awarded the Raw title. And then it was that weird vacated thing, on the double pin, I think. But, yeah, we have not had a Raw title change, since Austin beat Angle back in October of 2001. So really no TV title changes, world title changes, period, in the past 2+ years. And, only three in the past 5 years. So it's a big deal. I mean, it was a big deal. We get some entrances from some of our bigger names here, and we hear that I think JBL ended up coming out as number 19. He's very giddy, and then all of a sudden Kurt Angle's music fires up. He's the big surprise at number 20, which was pretty cool. I did think that kind of gave away who's probably going to be the winner of this whole thing, but I digress. JBL tells the group that he violently steps up for, I guess, SmackDown's pride, and he asked for a piece of Angle right away. Angle German Sim and throws him out like immediately. So they really dropped out JBL pretty hard here. Vito then rushes in, and Angle makes quick work of him. The rest of the guys wise up and they start ganging up on Angle, but they're not able to get him out, and the match kind of settles down from there. Henry and Eminem are teaming up throughout the match, and that is very good. Angle's also a monster. He's eliminating everyone in a flurry. I know 2006, obviously Angle was dealing with a lot of personal demons throughout the year, but so far in January, like everything that I've talked about with Shawn Michaels, feeling very lackadaisical and kind of invested in this Vince feud, but kind of going through the motions with everything else. It's the opposite with Kurt Angle, as he's just killing himself for everything that he's involved in. Henry and Angle spill to the outside, and Henry press slams Angle through the announce table in a great looking spot. Eminem worked to try to get rid of Rey Mysterio. He's barely hanging on. Lashley and Henry then have a big stare down. They go head to head, and Henry's able to take out Lashley, and we're down to around 7 left in this thing. Ray's able to eliminate Eminem in an awesome sequence, and now all of a sudden, after a couple of minutes, we're down to just 3, but Kurt's still out from being pressed on through the table, so we get a Ray versus Henry showdown. Great stare down with Ray's contacts being bugged out as he's looking at the prospect of trying to eliminate Mark Henry from a battle royal. Real good sequence between these two, with Ray showing some hope, but eventually Mark's able to throw him over. And just like that, Kurt Angle rises up like a zenith. Angle gives the Angle slam to Mark Henry. Henry fires back and works over for a while, but eventually Angle's able to make a comeback, and then we get an awesome finish, which kind of played off the Chris Benoit Big Show Royal Rumble 2004 finish, where Angle's able to get a grapevine on Henry and eventually pull him over the top rope. That gets a big pop. Your new champion, world champion, is Kurt Angle. And this was legit a very good battle royal. I kind of contemplated going with 4 stars on this one, which I was surprised at myself, but ended up going 3 3/4. So besides the Boogeyman segment, which sucked, no doubt about it, this was a very eventful and a very good Raw. You had a heartfelt Batista promo. The JBL promo before all the crap happened was fine, where he declared himself a wrestling god. The Battle Royal is one of the probably better straight Battle Royals I can recall seeing. And then Orton versus Chris Benoit is a great hidden gem match that, again, I wish more people would seek out. So, I really wish that Piper's Pit segment wasn't in here, as I was willing to call this, like a fantastic episode of SmackDown, give it like a 9 out of 10 or some outrageous rating. But over because of the Piper Pit segment, it gets detracted a little bit. But this is still, to me, like a 7.5, 8 out of 10 show, which was a vast improvement over Raw, which I'd probably give about a 4 out of 10. An eventful week in WWE land. There were some ups, there were some downs, but now, you know, we're already only a week away from the Royal Rumble, so they really had to get those Royal Rumble main matches set. Batista going down really hurt that, so we'll see what happened. They set up the feud with Henry, with Henry and Angle being the last two, but it does seem kind of rushed, but what can you do? Their hands were tied in that regard because Batista tore his bicep. So that'll do it for this edition of the Fighting Spirit of 06. Again, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, when we come back next time, we'll be talking about Ring of Honor, Hell Freezes Over, and also TNA with a Impact and Final Resolution. Please give all the other shows on the North-South Connection feed a listen. We got the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast with Jacob Williams and a rotating guest. This week they had Scott Shiflett on. They reviewed a very interesting episode of Raw and SmackDown I was unfamiliar with, but had some moments that are very GIF legends, I guess, with Vince auditioning to see who would be his new secretary. We had a new Year That Was this week that dropped with Aaron George talking about 1993. I was in lockstep with his opinions on that. On Thursday, we'll have a new Extreme Three-Way Dance that drops with Jeannie D'Amato and JT. And then I hear rumblings that a Jeff Learns Wrestling could be just around the corner. So please give a listen to that. Give us a like on the Facebook page, North South Connection Podcast. And give us a review if you'd be so kind, as that really helps us out to get more ears and eyes on the product and what we're trying to do. So thanks again for listening. This is Chad Campbell signing off.